All views, opinions, and comments expressed herein are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of StoneX Group Incorporated and or its subsidiaries. This content does not constitute an offer or solicitation to open a trading account, to trade in any specific product, or to engage with any services provided by StoneX Group Incorporated or its subsidiaries. This content is not intended for residents of any particular country or jurisdictions where such content is prohibited.
Welcome to the Trading Global Macro Podcast from StoneX, where we unpack the complex forces driving global financial markets. I'm John Kicklighter, Global Head of Content at StoneX.
And I'm Matt Weller, Global Head of Market Research for StoneX's self-directed brands. Each week in this podcast, we explore the macroeconomic trends and geopolitical events shaping Forex, equities, commodities, interest rates, and more. John, what is our topic today?
So we went back and forth on the topic. There's a number of ideas I think we have for the future, and we always welcome ideas, so do reach out. But I think one that I've been very interested in the past probably 6 months and very intensely over the past 3 months is the expectation for the path forward for the Federal Reserve into 2026 and through the end of 2026. So I think that's where we're going to steer our conversation today. And it is quite volatile in the interest because obviously the Fed had just cut rates at its last meeting. We have an intense amount of pressure from the White House on not just Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, but also Lisa Cook, one of the board governor members. And we see a new White House implant into the Fed board, and that's Steven Mnuchin. And there is a notable pressure from the rest of the world with the expectations of other peers are at a lower interest rate. You have a growing debt in the United States, and obviously the cost of facilitating this debt is increasing with these interest rates staying really high. And there's obviously the questions about economic activity versus the inflation figures, which we've been seeing, which is their dual mandate. And all this interest and all this crosstalk and competition for deciding how this trend is going to play out, I think this really is rife for being something that is not well priced in. And if it's not well priced in, that leads to potential volatility and potential trend shift. So I think it's a really good place for us to speak today. So with that being said, Matt, where are we at with monetary policy with the United States as it stands right now?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand sort of the baseline where we are. And then that way, with any sort of economic announcement or trend, you can decide where you might have a variant perspective that could lead to an opportunity. So based on my notes here, markets are expecting one or probably two more interest rate cuts this year in October and December from the Federal Reserve, and then about two or three more in 2026, bringing interest rates ultimately down to around 3%. Now, this September Fed meeting was one of the quarterly ones in which they released their extended forecast as part of the summary of economic projections. And the Fed was perhaps, at least so far, a little less dovish than that, projecting just barely two more interest rate cuts this year in October and December, but only an additional one interest rate cut in 2026. So I see that as kind of the key tension. The Fed did ultimately project an interest rate cut in 2027 to the extent that we can project that far out in these uncertain times. So it seems like both the market and the Fed are centering around this 3% level as what's called R star, or essentially the neutral interest rate for the economy. And it's just a question of how long it might take us to get down there. The other thing I want to mention, of course, the Fed has two mandates. We have inflation a bit above the Fed's target as it stands, but perhaps still inching lower at a very gradual rate. I might argue it's kind of paused a bit above the 2% target. But we also, of course, have the labor market side of the Fed's dual mandate. And if you've been looking at recent NFP reports, they've been sort of alarming, right? I don't have the exact numbers to hand, but something over the past 4 months, we've averaged maybe 30 or 40,000 jobs per month, which is very low for just about anyone who's been watching these numbers for any extended period of time. If we're not in a recession, usually the rule of thumb I learned is that the U.S. economy has to create about 100 to 150,000 jobs just to cancel out new additions to the labor force and maintain a steady level of unemployment. The key dynamic here, and Fed Chairman Powell has mentioned this. We had another Fed member, Barkin, mentioned this as well. Ken Griffin, the CEO of Citadel, or key hedge fund there, have all suggested that actually we only need to create somewhere between 0 and 50,000 jobs to maintain the current level of unemployment. And a big factor driving that is immigration. The U.S. is set to see net negative immigration, or net emigration with an E, for the first time in 50 years here in 2025. And I think that's the key dynamic to watch when it comes to the labor market, not getting too alarmed by what could very well be persistently low relative to the historical average readings for non-farm payrolls. As long as they're coming in around that 50,000 level, the Fed and key analysts believe that that could be enough to keep the unemployment rate steady. So there's a lot of assumptions going in here, but that's at least where we stand. And I think the key question will be whether we do get continued interest rate cuts into 2026. The Fed, of course, projecting just one token interest rate cut next year, whereas markets are being a little bit more aggressive. Where is that, how you're seeing it, John? And do you have any variant perspectives, any other considerations that we should keep in mind?
Yeah, I find it very interesting that, and one of the issues that I didn't speak to in the beginning is the question over data accuracy or veracity. Mm-hmm. I think that if you do, representative analysis, or you're doing something where you're surveying, because obviously you're not calling everybody in the United States every month to see, are you employed or not employed? You have to take sample sizes and you extrapolate from a large enough sample size. And that's quite onerous with this many people in the United States. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are challenges there. But the big revisions that you mentioned earlier, they have certainly caught the eye of obviously President Trump and others, and saying, well, you are this far off that it is it's just bad analysis. It's bad. It's the inaccuracy. So then we also get into the questions of the actual data itself. You get into the nuance of the fact that the number of jobs available or the number of people in the workforce, those start to change, because non-farm payrolls is not just a steady backdrop. You add one job doesn't necessarily mean that the unemployment rate is going to go down. If there are 100,000 new people in the country because they became immigrants, or they've come to age where they're actually started to rank into the job records, there's a lot of complications in this data. But we often treat this data as being very straightforward when it's not, when you have pressure from economic and financial policy, like we have from the White House, is trying to push a very aggressive bill, and the budget looks like it's going to grow, it could really use the debt financing issues or support and relief that you get from a lower interest rate at the benchmark level. But that it conflicts with that dual mandate that you talked about. So I think it's very interesting, the backdrop of the data. Inflation is still well above the PCE deflator, or CPI is still well above the 2% mark. Should we change the 2% mark to be something more representative of modern day? That's a very good argument. That's not the argument that most people are having. They're just saying that the Fed should cut rates by up to 200, 300 basis points is what we hear from some out of the White House. Or maybe the employment data needs improvement in terms of the measurement. But there's also a question about how much should we be looking at this? Because if you look at the unemployment rate, which you can actually pull up, and I'll pull up in chart for those that are not watching, the unemployment rate is very low relative to what it's been historically. So there's no specific level at which you start changing your monetary policy bearing from the Fed's perspective, like they have the target 2% rate for inflation. So at what point does this become pressurized? Well, that's, you leave that open to those officials to make the determination of actually shifting priorities. And if we look at what they had said at their last statement, at least the press conference from the chairman after the rate decision, it still is a very balanced concern of risks, whereas just prior to that, it was still very much inflation and was the principal concern. Now it's a balanced concern. But if you look at CPI or PCE deflator, it's still elevated. The unemployment rate, yes, is climbing, but it's well below the average that we've had over the past four decades. So it becomes very much in the eyes of the beholder, and rate officials who have a lot of experience in this and finding that balance are now getting a lot of armchair quarterbacks trying to dictate how monetary policy should be derived. And this is not a low risk situation. If you are over accommodative, it can create problems too. So if you cut interest rates, it does lead to very serious tangible problems. Just like keeping it too high for too long can create a very bad environment for employment. So it's remarkable to me that, like as you raised, there is really not a lot of easing that's priced in. The market's acting like it. There's a lot more easing priced in, but I think it's very light. And when you look at the Summer of Economic Projections that they just released, it's projecting only a 3.4, which is, you know, we act with a range, so 3.375, which isn't a whole lot of rate cuts through the end of 2026 from where we're at right now. So I don't think that the markets are really, I think they're pricing in more than what even the Fed is admitting to right now. And the Fed has been very reticent despite all the pressure that they've been getting externally. And relative to that, there is some misallocated expectation between the White House, the Fed, the markets. And I think that still requires a lot of resolution. And I guess we'll get through it. We'll see it as things come, and we have the next rate decision. We have the next non-farm payrolls update and all this other data. But, you know, setting all that aside, where do you think we end 2026 in interest rates? So a finger in the air question.
Sure. And I'll reserve the right to change my opinion as soon as tomorrow. But as it stands, I honestly might side more with the Federal Reserve in this case, that we could see maybe something in that low 3% range, but perhaps not below it. We do have this massive complication of a likely new chairman of the Federal Reserve come April or May next year that could sway the majority opinion. We have the question of whether Jerome Powell might stay on the Federal Reserve even after his term as chairman ends, which is a distinct possibility. And Lisa Cook, of course, her situation up in the air. But on balance, I think it's a situation where if you look historically, and daggers out for people who say this, but the economy's kind of good from the Federal Reserve's perspective. Inflation is on par with the 3% average that we've seen over decades. It just feels bad because we saw a big spike of inflation and it's been above target for four straight years. But before that, it was below that 2% target for basically since the great financial crisis. So I think widening out that perspective, that's why the Fed feels justified in being a little bit more cautious. Of course, we have the constant imposition of tariffs, which are seen as inflationary, though you might argue that we haven't seen much of that inflation in the data, or at least to the extent that many had feared. So that'll be a key question, too. If tariffs are likely to cause inflation on a delay, whether that's a one-time bump or leads to persistently higher prices, those will be some of the key questions that the Federal Reserve is wrestling. But I think central bankers are conservative by their very nature. And I think a gradual decrease in interest rates, maybe two more interest rate cuts by, say, January of next year, pause, see how the economy is doing, maybe a little bit of help as we move into the middle of the year. But that kind of would be my lean at this point. I think the market may be ahead of itself, perhaps putting more weight on some of that political pressure that the Fed is feeling. But it's honestly, it feels like the type of economy, if you just reset your brain and look at where the numbers are, that the Fed's relatively close to most of its targets. So large adjustments at this point from that perspective don't seem justified in my view. Do you have a different perspective there, John, or are you thinking we should raise interest rates? What's your perspective on what the Fed might be doing next?
I think you could go one of two ways. One, they crawl and there are very few rate cuts priced in, maybe even less than what they're already projecting, which I think they're projecting very, very conservatively, as you suggested. They're really not going for a whole lot of rate cuts from where they're currently standing. So I think that they do, unless the data, you know, this month comes out very poorly, at their next meeting, I think they're just going to really question whether they should act and maybe reserve for December, because it also is paired with an updated quarterly forecast. If that is not the case, then it's because most likely the markets are starting to come undone, and the world, or the United States, I guess, is expecting an economic crunch. And if that's the case, then yes, they will cut rates very aggressively. However, if you're cutting rates aggressively because of that, and this is the irony, you cut rates because conditions look poor. And what we're hearing a lot from the White House is we need to cut rates. It's utterly a necessity. And yet, no, but conditions are fantastic. That's not usually how you operate. You try to head off serious problems, and the Fed is slow to react, as most central banks are. They are usually late in the curve. So it's usually happening because we're already under significant pressure. So the alternative scenario is it's because the markets are falling apart and because the economy, the perspective is we're heading into a light recession. And then, yes, you cut very aggressively. So it comes to one of those two things, but then you have to start thinking, where would the markets go from that? So this is the last thing, and we'll wrap it up. But what do you think will happen with the dollar, or what do you think will happen with the S&P 500 as a benchmark for risk appetite if we crawl higher? And what do you think will happen if, obviously, I think it's pretty straightforward, if things are cut aggressively?
So I think the market is currently pricing in the market's expectations. That's almost a tautology, right? But so I think it depends on how we come in relative to those market expectations, which are essentially that interest rates will be down at 3% here in the US by the end of next year. So obviously a lot of uncertainties, a recession, theoretically a negative thing for corporate profits, but we do have this large Fed put, as it's called, where the Fed could very willingly cut interest rates aggressively if it sees the need. So against that backdrop, I think it's generally going to be supportive of risk appetite, at least until that bullet in the chamber is used up of the Fed put. And then I think that continues to keep pressure on the US dollar, because we haven't broadened out this conversation. It's probably beyond the scope of this call. But in other countries such as Europe, such as Japan, certainly some of these other major economies are either ending interest rate cutting cycles, or in the case of the Bank of Japan, perhaps embarking on an interest rate hiking cycle. So I think those longer term interest rate shifts of alternative countries and other currencies could support those relative to the US dollar, or long story short, the potential for continued weakness in the US dollar. So maybe this is something I might have said in the last podcast, but it seems like a trend is your friend type of scenario until we see something to shift it. And I don't think we see that right now. You were talking about a recession right now. The GDP now types of forecasts are looking at 3+% growth, almost 4% growth for the U.S. economy in the third quarter. That can change. And if it does, I do anticipate the Fed will respond to that. But as it stands, I don't think we're in that type of scenario. So I think a continuation of some of the trends we've seen might be the most likely path forward, at least in my perspective.
Very nice. All right. Thanks for tuning in for the Trading Global Macro Podcast from StoneX. If you enjoyed today's discussion, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm John Kicklighter.
And I'm Matt Weller. Join us again next week for more insights into the trends and events shaping the world's financial markets. And don't forget to drop us a review, like our podcast, and give us any support that you can. Thank you.